Are you cyber confident? Do you know what your digital footprint is? Do you understand the reasons you're a cyber target? In this podcast series, you'll learn what it means to be cyber confident both at work and at home. Because when it comes to cyber security, the front line is you. I'm Josella Waldron, and this episode is all about online gaming. Lieutenant Commander Gordon Jones is chair of the Royal Navy eSports team and chair of the Royal Navy Video Gaming and eSports Association. He explains the risks involved while playing online and how to protect yourself from cyber threats. First, though, Lieutenant Commander Jones told me about his lifelong love of video games.
I got my first console a long time ago, and I've been playing games, well, realistically, since the early 80s. With the emergence of the very first generations of consoles, I started gaming. But of course, back in those days, what you did was you gamed on your own. You put a cassette into the console, and you would play on that, but you couldn't play online. And then as the internet started to emerge, I started playing in LAN parties and things like that with friends when I was at university. And you take your computer along and everyone just sets up this massive snake's wedding of cables running around inside a house, and everyone connects up all their computers and you just play against each other. And then as internet gaming started to become much more common, I joined the Navy and started traveling an awful lot, and online gaming kind of passed me by for a number of years. Then I started playing a few different games, and then just recently, in the last 18 months, 2 years, I've got back into it again, and I've started to discover the joys and the excitement and the challenges of online gaming.
It's also known as eSports, and you're very involved in the Navy eSports. Tell me a little bit about that.
So we've got two organisations. We have a Navy Video Gaming and eSports Association, which is a welfare organisation for members of the Navy, civil servants who work for the Navy, reservists, Marines, our veterans as well, to be able to connect and find like-minded people to be able to game with, playing a wide variety of computer games, from people who play games playing on their phone to people who game in the most competitive esports around. All of that is played in some way or another by people in the Navy, and they're all welcome to join the association. The Navy eSports team is my competitive arm. So those are my most competitive players. They're the people who play the really high-end eSports competitions. And those we run selection competitions exactly the same as any traditional sporting organisation would. And we run selection events and training camps. And people will make the team, or they won't make the team, or they'll make reserves on the team. And then those people go forward and represent the Navy at competitions. Some of those will be inter-services, playing against the esports team from the Army and the RAF. Some of them will be international, playing against esports teams from other nations. Some of them will be against civilian teams and such like. And it's a really wide dynamic of people that we can play against. And actually, the last 18 months, the fact that we were able to play these games from home has meant that we've seen a lot of representation from the Navy esports team at a lot of different competitions.
Can you give me a rough figure of how many people are involved?
So we've got about 500 members in the association for the Navy at the moment. The Army are at about 3,500, 3,800. The RAF are a touch over 2,000, but we're the newest of the associations. So the RAF formed in 2019, the Army formed in 2020, and then we formed in 2021.
What is it that appeals to people? Why do people get involved in online gaming?
It's accessible, I think. I think people like having something that they can access from home, that they can do in their downtime. I think it's something which is inclusive by design, even if it's not necessarily inclusive by nature, because actually a lot of gaming is something that people who wouldn't thrive at traditional sports are able to thrive at. Some people who thrive at traditional sports are excellent esports competitors as well. And if you look at people like Lando Norris, from Formula One, who is both a, you know, a world-class Formula One racer and runs an esports team and competes at the highest levels in esports as well. There is no barrier between people who are good at sports and people who are good at esports. Some people are good at both, some people are good at one or the other, but it is inclusive by nature. Yeah, those people who want to get into esports, realistically, the single biggest barrier is having the equipment to be able to play the esports. On top of that, it is distributed. So to play football, you need to have enough people to be able to create a game. You know, realistically, your minimum number is four. And for people who don't live in town, or people who don't go out and see people, people who have things like social anxiety, they can get online and they can meet people online. And I've met a lot of people in the last 18 months for whom esports is their opportunity to be able to connect to other people. And it's an excellent opportunity that we didn't have 5, 6, 7 years ago.
So it's attractive to a lot of people, but unfortunately, this is a podcast about cyber awareness. Cyber criminals quite like to get involved as well, don't they? Tell me about that.
Absolutely. There's a lot of things involved in esports, but because esports is competitive by nature, that means that there must be something to compete for. That means that there are prizes. And the nature of a lot of esports games as well is that people invest money in order to be able to increase their abilities. At that point, things become financially attractive. If there is money for winning a competition, then that means that there may be someone who's willing to cheat. And exactly the same way as people will use artificial stimulants in order to make themselves more competitive at a sporting event, people will use hacks and exploits in game in order to make themselves more competitive in computing, in esports. People who invest a lot of time and money into their accounts for being able to play esports will sometimes find that their accounts are hacked. And because a lot of people do not practice good cybersecurity awareness, when they start setting up their accounts, maybe people recycle their passwords. And by putting yourself out there by playing esports and being seen, if someone chooses to then try and hack your account and finds that you have an exploitable password, well, then they'll start trying to find other things. And they'll start searching for bank account details or email details or almost anything. Which is an exploitable factor, which means that realistically esports is something where you have to start practicing good cybersecurity and good cyber health right at the very beginning, which is especially important with esports because so many children play and it becomes an opportunity for them to learn good practices very, very early.
In your opinion, what are the main risks to cybersecurity that an individual player may experience when they're playing games online?
As well as what I've just said, there's also the fact that a lot of gaming communities also communicate very freely. There's been a huge growth in the Discord platform for communications recently, which allows people to talk to each other on a platform which is designed by gamers for gamers to use. It has a huge amount of capability within it and a lot of security built in, but a lot of the security settings within it are as vulnerable as the security in anything else. Just this week, one of my gaming platforms has put up a warning about an exploit in Discord, which is being used to try and hack people's accounts. Because being able to find out, you know, hack into someone's Discord allows you to be able to find out what games they play, which allows you to be able to find out what other methods you may have of being able to exploit information that the cyber threat, a cyber actor, would be able to get hold of. This is why, for a lot of people, and we encourage good cyber health within the Navy team, it's getting people to think about things that make you safer, like using auto-generated passwords and password managers to be able to protect yourself, and using things like two-factor authentication to mean that even if someone does manage to work out, you know, what your password is, they can't get in without having access to your 2FA. The same is true of Twitch as well. So Twitch is a platform for being able to live stream games. And that has two factors to the threat. Some people don't stream, but they get involved and go on and watch. They may comment upon things. And again, for people trying to effectively mosaic information together about an individual, that all becomes something which they can do using Twitch. For people who live stream their games, a lot of them use face cams, which means that they may well be putting part of themselves, an image of themselves, out there into the world as well. Which again becomes a matter of good practice to protect yourself, especially for our esports gamers who are in the military.
What impact do you think that the pandemic and lockdown has had on online gaming, and consequently, have there been any cybersecurity incidents relating to online gaming and the pandemic?
The pandemic has had a massive impact on online gaming. The number of people who game has increased exponentially within the UK especially. And we've now seen a case that not just people who game, but people who watch gaming, so people who stream online gaming, has increased to something like 1 in 7 members of the British public stream online gaming. And about 1 in 5 of those people also play online games as well. But when you then take that down to filter it by age range, it's something like 70% of 12 to 20 year olds, I think it was, stream games and play online games. Which means that we've seen this massive explosion of interest in online gaming, and people getting into it, and people getting into it quite young, which is where you then get to that stage of having to teach good online cyber health, online cyber security, to very young people, effectively to start them at that stage of them thinking about good cyber security and good cyber health. But yes, there have been incidences of cyber security. I can't go into huge numbers of details. I'm not aware of a lot of them. We've seen a lot of instances of people getting penetration tested on their personal computers after playing in a game against someone, because someone didn't like the way that they were playing or something, or took objection to someone doing something in game. And used one of the exploitable tools available through the internet, through the dark web, in order to almost penetration test someone's internet connection at home, probably with anticipation of trying to dox or DDoS them. And there's an entire new language of cybersecurity threats around online gaming. So DDoS is it's an attack against your internet connection. So effectively what you do is you use one of the online tools to be able to use a botnet of some description to constantly query into someone's internet connection. So effectively your internet connection depends upon it having a relatively quiet, stable connection at home in order for you to be able to do things. And a DDoS attack basically floods that internet connection with lots and lots and lots of computers on a botnet somewhere, most of which have no idea that they're on the botnet, all flooding your computer with a "Who are you? Who are you? Who are you? Who are you?" And your internet connection is so busy responding to those, because normally they're a high priority but low bandwidth request. But when you get a million of them coming in every minute, your internet connection is completely flooded, which means that you'll be forced offline from everything apart from your internet trying to answer those queries. DDoSing is an inconvenience for us, but a suitably powerful botnet would be able to DDoS a massive website. So we saw this last year, I think. One of the banks had a DDoS attack launched on their website. It forced the bank's internet to shut down for a period of a couple of days, because it costs practically nothing to be able to make launch an attack like that. Doxing is more insidious, insofar as doxing is where you use cyber exploitations to be able to find out about a person that you've encountered online and find out information about them in the real world and then posting it openly online. So similar to what happened with J.K. Rowling, where people found, you know, posted her home address on the internet, making a statement there regarding a threat that potentially would have had an impact on her personally. And doxing is, I wouldn't say slightly less extreme, but it's an alternative form of swatting, which was a big deal in America last year and the year before that, where someone would effectively, if someone had been doxed previously, they would wait for that person to be on stream and then would call in a 911 emergency call about an armed incident occurring at that person's home address, which would lead to US SWAT armed police breaking into that person's house because they believed there was a hostage situation happening. And on at least one occasion, someone was shot.
Oh my goodness. So for any parents listening to this, I think they're probably quite, they're thinking, what's going on in my children's bedrooms? Is my internet, are we going to be cyber attacked due to somebody playing FIFA in the other room? It's a big thing, as you've already said, with teenagers and children. Do you think there's a big risk there? And what should parents be doing about it? Because it's quite difficult when you haven't grown up with this stuff or you haven't got an interest in gaming when your children have, to know what they're doing and what the best practice is.
So the best practice is start teaching good cyber health and cyber security practices early. I have teenage children myself, and I've started working with them to go, okay, let's talk about passwords. Let's talk about how you make a password genuinely secure. Let's talk about, you know, two-factor authentication and how you can make it, even if someone can hack your password, even if they can do that, if they don't physically have access to whatever you're using for your two-factor authenticator, they can't get in, which effectively then secures you and safeguards you. For people who aren't aware of this, have a look online. There are lots of different resources online for being able to learn about good cyber health and good cyber security. The answer isn't take them offline. The answer isn't and can't be stop them doing these things, because it is part of life today in the 21st century. Online gaming and being able to game online, learning to do that safely and being able to operate online safely is going to be an essential life skill for our children, which means that we can't let our lack of education on this, because it's not where we were raised, it's not what we were raised with, we can't let that lack of education stop them from being able to do it, but we also can't let that effectively allow them to do it without restriction, and so effectively doing it unsafe. We wouldn't let our children cross the road without teaching them to be able to do it safely. We shouldn't let our children do things online with strangers without teaching them how to do that safely.
Talking about strangers, there's also talking online, because there's lots of means of communication with the other players. How much of a risk is that?
So there are some risks associated with that. There are places, you know, dark places on the internet and the dark web where there are plans around this. And again, the answer to it is open and honest Discord with the children. Not Discord the app, actually Discord as in the word that it's based upon, in terms of actually discourse, talking to them. Talking to your children about how to be safe, talking to my gamers about how to be safe online, teaching people, you know, that they don't need to discuss the nth degree of their home life. They don't need to tell strangers that they're gaming with how old they are, where they live, what school they go to. No, I mean, you can't say this to some children, because some children will talk about literally anything to anybody. But if you wouldn't feel comfortable with them sharing that information with a stranger on the street, then we shouldn't feel comfortable with them sharing that information with a stranger online. And it's up to us, again, to educate our children on how to maintain these safe online habits.
Have there been any instances where you or somebody you know, cybersecurity has been threatened while online gaming?
So I've had an incident where one of my gamers that I was gaming with We had a particularly successful game. It went very, very well. They had an absolute clean sweep. They aced the game. They got a lot of abuse in the chat bars about it. You know, about 5 minutes after the game, they commented, they were like, oh, that's interesting. You know, my VPN's just pinged that I've had a couple of people poke at my internet connection afterwards. And it becomes that matter of, you know, so even when they have that level of security, you know, people who are willing to pay enough to hackers to be able to get around that, they may still get to that stage. But then you get to the benefit of the fact that they had a VPN, which meant that effectively it safeguarded them against what could have been a DDoS.
Wow. Gosh, it's all sounding very dangerous. Do people still play games that they can pass on to other people? And how does that work? Or is everything online now?
So people still do both. And there's definitely a place for gaming using console cartridges and DVDs and such like. You know, for children especially, it's nice for them to be able to go down to a pre-owned store and be able to buy a game a little bit cheaper, to be able to get hold of that, because you can't sell back a digital code. You can't return a digital code. You know, once you've finished the game, to then be able to buy the next version or to buy an updated version or a different game that you want to try. So there is definitely a place for both. I think certainly we're at that stage these days that, you know, my kids still occasionally will exchange a game with one of their friends in order to be able to play one or the other at home. A lot of the make manufacturers are reaching the stage where they're actually offering opportunities for you to be able to loan your code to another gamer, and it will effectively stop it from working for you for a whilst they're playing it, but then will return it back to you on completion.
And what are the cyber risks with not only a code but the physical games, passing those around?
The cyber risks for most of those are actually, as far as I'm aware, relatively low. So with most games, they save your progress and your personal details for the game on the console that you're playing on. Now, this is slightly different for some of the gaming systems that use cartridges, because some of those save details of the game on the cartridge rather than on the console. But games that use discs, typically you can't do anything to that disc. It's a, you know, it's a readable only item, and it's read only memory, so you can't do anything to it.
Is there anything people should do if they're passing around cartridges?
Normally it would be coded, as far as I know, normally it would be coded behind their personal account. So even if you loan someone the cartridge, they might not be able to access anything personal about you. So normally with a cartridge, what happens is it will save your progress in the game on the cartridge, but it won't save anything about your personal account, because in that mm-hmm. case the account is all held on the console. So all the details about the console are saved on, about you are saved on the console, but then what it does, in order to save it from having to create save files on the console to save memory, it saves onto the cartridge just what progress you have made. So if someone was to borrow your cartridge, they would be able to use all the advantages of everything that you have unlocked in that game, but they wouldn't necessarily be able to use access anything about you yourself.
In that case, let's talk a bit about consoles. If you want to buy a new one and you want to sell your old one, what do you need to do before you sell it?
Make sure that you do a complete factory reset on it. Anything that you do on your console, you need to make sure that you wipe all of your personal details from the console, any attached memory cards, any removable hard drives. You need to do a complete return all of it to manufacturer's settings before you take it back to the store, because on at least one occasion I've bought a secondhand console from a store that had a removable hard drive in it that the store didn't know the removable hard drive was in there, and there was still information held on it from the previous owner, which I, as a good and diligent person, made sure that I wiped the hard drive, removable hard drive, and took it back to factory settings.
This is all such a useful information. How do you think individuals can adapt their behaviour while online gaming to make themselves more protected? What are your sort of top tips to end on?
Top tips, don't give people personal details that they don't need to know. The reason that a lot of us use gamer tags is because we're perfectly happy with people just knowing us by our gamer tag. The vast majority of people that I game with have no idea what my name is in real life. For those of us in the military, don't discuss being in the military. Have a clear and consistent alternative story of what it is that you tell people that is you do, and don't share information with people that you don't need to. When it comes to creating passwords and accounts, practice the good cybersecurity accounts. Treat your gaming accounts exactly the same as you would your bank. Have two-factor authentication set up. Use a randomly generated password that is effectively not impossible to break, but is incredibly difficult to break. Most smartphones these days come with a password manager built into them. Use them, because it's almost impossible to be able to remember a 20-character randomly generated password. But actually, if it's saved in your phone, then you'll be able to access it wherever you go, and the account is there available for you, but it's not going to be exploitable. When it comes to two-factor authentication, use some of the authenticator apps that are available out there. They're out there for a reason, and the vast majority of them make your account safer.
That was Lieutenant Commander Gordon Jones. Look out for more episodes in this series. You can find them on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can find out more by emailing the team at cyberconfident@mod.gov.uk.